This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host Striga and I am back with my man on my side, Dylan. We're back to talk about the best of the Super Junior.
That's right. And this is something that we talked about last episode. We gave you the part one. And now we've got the sequel for you right now.
Yeah.
The later half of the show, and this is where the tournament really picked up, we're about to get into as well, because the first episode, if you listened, you know that I was kind of so-so on the tournament. And I think now, once we've got Corcoran Hall involved in play, things picked up a little bit. So now we've got some stuff to talk about, big news all over the place, and New Japan. So a very New Japan-centric episode right now with the thick of their one of their biggest tournaments of the year. And I'm very excited to talk about it with you, Striga. It's a beautiful day out right now.
Oh, yeah, it is a beautiful day. 4 days off for me, a long weekend here in Germany. So I'm enjoying my free time right now. Found the time to watch some New Japan shows live now. We are 13 days into the Best of the Super Junior. We talked about the first 6 days, as you mentioned, in our last episode. I'm going to talk about the shows starting from May 22nd, but before we go to that, Dylan, there is one very obvious topic. Going back to our Patreon review of AEW, actually. Moxley, Dylan, he is going to be the opponent for Juice Robinson. We debated it on our Double or Nothing review, and I brought up the name, and you had a very good argument why he wouldn't be the guy, the Knife Pervert 2. But he still is.
Yeah. Moxley, depending on how you want to pronounce it. You know, he's, when I said that on our Patreon show, on the Double or Nothing review, basically my whole point was that it was crazy to risk injury and go into all these other companies when you have something so special as AEW is preparing to be. And they've got all the momentum on their side. I just don't think from a business perspective it would be the smartest move, and I still kind of don't. But when, after listening to him talk and on his podcast, and to see a little bit of what is inside his head,
yes,
now I can see that this wasn't a business decision per se. It was more so something that it's fulfilling himself on the inside, you know? So with that in mind, I think it makes, first of all, from the New Japan perspective, I think it makes absolutely perfect sense to bring him in. He's got a hot run coming off of WWE. Look, we saw it at Double or Nothing. His debut was one of the hottest moments of the show. He came across like a superstar in that segment. He has this big interview we talked about off-air a little bit with Chris Jericho, and he's just one of the hottest names in wrestling right now. So if you're a company like New Japan, and you see this guy coming off of WWE, somebody who's been in the news for a while because of his strange contract scenario in WWE. Basically, people were talking about him for the last 3 months, what he would do when he would leave. He really built himself up with his self-hype video that he produced. And he's got all the momentum. And if you're a company that is going into Dallas for this G1 special show, you need names to draw people to this show. As far as I know, the tickets are not the hottest item right now. They want people that will help them. And Moxley, of all the people they could get, he's probably right near the top of their list for what they want to accomplish. And for him, I stand by what I said from a business perspective on the Patreon, but after hearing him, my opinion changed. I got a completely different perspective of what he would want in wrestling. And I'm really happy for him, in all honesty, you know? Because a lot of guys would think about how I said it, pretty much, and think about the business first and not wanting to work as hard. Because, look, he's got money. he doesn't have to work that hard. He doesn't have to go to all these crazy places. But he's not just going to New Japan. He's going to random indies in the Northeast. You know, he's all over the place right now. So this is a guy who clearly wants to wrestle and have some sort of personal fulfillment from it. So I'm really happy for him, and I'm looking forward to see what he will do here in this run as the Knife Guy 2, Knife Pervert 2, whatever you want to call him. But it was a really big surprise to me. I was very surprised, genuinely. And even now, I don't know how long ago this was all came up with or thought about bringing him in, but you know, I think he got a lot of buzz, and he's done a great job of being one of the hottest names in wrestling right now. So it's a big win for him to be in this situation, and it's a big win for New Japan to get a star of his caliber.
Well, this NEW you're talking about, this random promotion from the Northeast, isn't so random. That's a promotion that did Kenny Omega versus Rey Fénix last year. So he's going to earn a lot of cash by doing that match for them, that's for sure. But yeah, I was going to make the same point about him. Like, for the past 8 years, he followed his business mind. He just was there in WWE, did his job, and that apparently made him want to quit. He didn't want to be there anymore. And from what he said on the podcast, that's totally relatable, that he didn't want to be there anymore, because he doesn't want to be a WWE independent contractor. He wants to be a professional wrestler. Period. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's what it comes down to.
And he just doesn't want other people telling him what to do,
yeah.
and you know, scripting his segments out,
exactly.
Like we saw.
Exactly. That's,
you know,
what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a lot of problems with that. You know, and I don't blame him, you know, because a lot of the stuff he was saying, you know, that interview was really a fascinating listen for him. And, you know, really, I think if you follow the company long enough, you kind of already know about a lot of these headaches that he went through, and that it's not that rare. I'm sure there's a lot of people that feel exactly like he does right now in WWE. But on a personal level, he really did a great job of getting things over, like the stories he told, like when they tried to make him say some kind of crazy line about Roman Reigns' leukemia, one of his best friends, and he shut it down. He wanted to walk out then. And I really got to give him huge props for that, by the way. I didn't say this publicly on Twitter, but something that really impressed me about that is that how he did stay and fill out his contract. Because to me, I was just thinking when that happened, if that had happened to me, like, and let's say somebody I was close to had something happen and they tried to do that to me, I would have just left. And that would have been the end of it. And I would probably have been like Pac, because they would have kept screwing me over for like a year straight afterwards. But Dean, Jon Moxley, he stayed because his wife is there. You don't want to get her wrapped up in all this. And I thought he did a really great job of looking out for the people close to him. And even on that interview, everybody kind of compares it to the CM Punk one from these years ago. But the main difference between the two is Moxley, in all of this, yes, he complains about the company and all the bullcrap that he had to go through, and rightfully so, because all that stuff sounds pretty awful. You know, I think anybody would be mad about it. But he doesn't come across as somebody, yes, he hated working in WWE in that environment that you mentioned, but he is not bitter towards wrestling. He sounds super motivated by all this, actually, and that he's going to come out and be the best Jon Moxley he can be. And I think that's really impressive, because he's been beaten down for all these years, but he didn't let it stop him. I think that's an awesome thing on his part.
And that's another point I wanted to address. Like, Juice Robinson is the perfect opponent for Jon Moxley for the reason that Juice Robinson really was, well, not the first. You could actually name Christian Cage as the first guy who left WWE after the Monday Night War was over between WCW and WWE. Like, the first guy who left WWE to find a home elsewhere and to try to build up something elsewhere. But the first guy who left WWE in this new environment and bet on himself was Juice Robinson to leave NXT and come to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we have Jon Moxley kind of doing the same, but in this now, again, changed environment. I'm looking at this card here we have on purolove.com, and I see the AEW logo behind Jon Moxley, and I also see the AEW logo behind Chris Jericho. And these two guys coming into New Japan, while having a full-term contract with AEW, those guys show people in WWE that you can have a contract with a promotion, and you actually get paid by the promotion, and at the same time, you can have other gigs elsewhere when your time allows it, and you will make a good living out of it. And that's a game changer. And AEW is a game changer in more than one aspect of the game. And so this is really the first time in 20 years that the business side of wrestling has been so in motion. Like 1999 was really the final year before WCW ended when people moved from WCW to WWF and vice versa. After that, in 2000, I don't think that anyone moved from WWE to WCW. At least not anyone of note.
I think what about Ahmed Johnson?
Anyone of note.
Okay.
Well, I believe, wasn't he in 1999? I don't know.
He might have.
Might have been. Let me see. I'm looking that up right now.
Big T, like I said, this is your Big T update.
Oh, he came in 2000. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But he wasn't working for WWE in 1999, so...
No, who knows where he was.
Like he didn't have a match, maybe he was injured, I don't know. So, yeah, the last guy of note who left WWE probably was Jeff Jarrett. And, yeah, in 2000, everybody left WCW who could to join WWF back then. But now... there is this other promotion, and it's going to be very interesting to see who else moves and who else is going to AEW and maybe who else is leaving for other ventures as well. There is a list on the internet with guys with names on it, and I gotta say I am not surprised to read any of those names. But
yeah,
that's something for a different discussion, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so John Moxley is coming to New Japan. He's coming to the Best of the Super Junior Finals. Do you believe that he will be in for more than this one date?
Yeah, totally. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think there's no reason not to be. And when you look at what he said in the interview with Jericho, he mentioned how he was planning on, you know, after everything that happened, he was going to really do something that put himself outside of his own comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look ahead a little bit in a couple of months, you notice there's a certain portion of the calendar that he has no dates on.
Yeah.
And it just so happens to coincide with this G1 Climax tournament. I don't know if you've heard of this.
And it so happens to be the most out of his comfort zone possible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's out of anybody's comfort zone, really. Yep. Because even if you're a fan of Japanese wrestling or whatever, and he doesn't really come across to me like that stylistically, but... Who knows what's going on in that mind? But even if you're a super fan, know all the moves, know everybody, have 10 dream matches in Japan, the problem is you're going to get to wrestle all these guys of different styles no matter which block you end up in, you know, because someone like Okada is not the same as Bad Luck Fale. And they're not the same as Toru Yano, and they're not the same as Juice Robinson, and they're not the same as Ishii, and so on and so forth. So you're going to be wrestling very different styles of matches. You won't have time to have a comfort zone in the G1 because you're going to have to prepare for all of these guys.
Especially if you're new within the promotion.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't really know what his familiarity with New Japan is, but I think that is very much outside of his comfort zone, and I think that would be, again, from a New Japan perspective, I just think it's a huge win to have him on board for something like that because it gets you a real star from the American wrestling scene, from the WWE, and you've got him for this G1 Climax, which is, I think, a really big thing for them.
Yeah, totally, totally. Him and G1 would be very interesting. There would be... I really don't know how he would fare in the tournament, but it would be very interesting, to say the least.
Here's the thing. With him in general, I've never really been the biggest fan of his as an in-ring performer.
Yeah.
And I don't think his
trying to say.
Like I said, I don't think stylistically he really fits in either. But I think his run could be good or bad depending on how they approach it and how he approaches it. If they do something, let's say he wins this title and then joins Bullet Club.
Oh.
Like, that right away kills him, like, dead. And that will make me not interested in him at all. If he's going to do a bunch of bullcrap like that, which, you know, he was kind of a garbage wrestler on the indies originally.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I once saw him live in a no rope spot by image.
See? He dressed like he was Onita for a long time when he was in WWE. So maybe there is some kind of influence we know about. But like I said, he's not really a purist dream as a wrestler, so to speak. So I don't really know how he'd fit in. Kind of like, and the funny thing is, the best way I could describe him or what I would kind of think he would want to be would be somewhat similar to Jericho and how he wrestles with these wild brawling matches. But then becomes the issue of, we have Jericho like for that. So if Ambrose or Moxley is going to be that kind of wrestler, it's more like just having him, but he's going to be here all the time with G1 or however long he stays for. So I think it'll be very interesting, but stylistically, I don't know if he's going to be somebody I personally am excited about in terms of, like, there's really nobody on this roster, in my opinion, that has a dream match with him that's like, I can't wait to see that. You know, Moxley versus, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Whoever. You know, like, he doesn't really fit that style of wrestler to me, but if he can do something with promos and a storyline, perhaps, I think that could end up working and bringing kind of like an alternative to the card from the other New Japan wrestlers that they have.
Yeah. That's going to be the G1 climax. But for now, let's take our focus back.
Do you think he wins the title?
No, I don't.
You can't have him lose.
That's true, though.
Yeah, like, no way. And look how they booked Juice. Like, they never protect him. Like I said.
Yeah,
although, I will say...
And I gotta say, there's this question that we got from Marvin. And Marvin wanted us to talk about what we think about Juice Robinson's change on commentary through the tournament because of the Moxley video. And yeah, I thought the change of Juice Robinson was pretty much like... We, the viewers, saw it because this video kept playing every single tournament day, and Juice Robinson kept trying to be nice and polite about it, but eventually he was so annoyed and fed up with it that he couldn't handle it anymore, and the camera was focusing on him, and he was just so fed up with it that he once even left the commentary position. So I thought they did a good job with that.
That was cool. And let me just say something. I love that whole build-up to all of that and how that played out, pretty much. But I was sad when he left because he's an awesome commentator.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love him on commentary, like, tons of personality. And he'll say stuff that you wouldn't even expect on some of these matches, if I can remember any one particularly. There's one in particular I noted down because it just had me laughing my ass off when he said it. But Juice was awesome, I think, on commentary. And this tour has done a better job of pushing him than actually him being a wrestler on the other tours has somehow. Because he's got this feud, he's an awesome commentator, done a great job asserting himself there. And I think this is a match people are genuinely looking forward to. And even after everything that happened with Juice this last year or so, I think he's really gotten a good push during this tournament as the commentator and this Time's Up feud with Moxley.
Yeah, Time's Up.
Time's up.
Time's up on June 5, and we already know that on June 5, there will be Shingo Takagi in the finals of the Best of the Super Junior. He is undefeated, just as you and I wanted him to be. And, like, I don't know if you, the listeners, have been catching up on everything that the Best of the Super Junior had to offer, but we are here to address some of the best matches that have happened between May 22nd and May 31. So, if you have been picking and choosing from the first 6 days of this tournament, of the Best of Super Junior, I can only tell you to watch these three Currican Hall shows as a whole. Because this stretch of these three shows was just fucking incredible. And I personally would say, Dylan, that the show on the 23rd, it's day 8 of the Best of the Super Junior, was one of the best shows of the year for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, you had three great matches on that show too.
Exactly, Shingo. And not only that, but let's focus on the first show. That's 22nd of May, Kurokan Hall. We have five matches in the match guide right now. It's Gresham against Titan in 10 minutes and 55 seconds. I could have watched this match go on for at least 10 more minutes.
That's the story of this whole tournament for Gresham. Like, I've had this. These two are the two most disappointing performers to me. Like, Gresham and Titan.
I'm going to make an assessment of Gresham later on, but Titan, definitely.
Yeah, well, Gresham is not disappointed because of anything his fault. It's that they don't let him, like, they haven't given him a chance. But to me, like, when they announced this tournament, I expected all these great matches. And, like, it hasn't happened because of the timing, and that's my problem with this match. Similar to the match with, I think it was Gresham and Dragon Lee. Mm-hmm. But basically, I felt like they were doing a great job, and everybody was saying, oh, Dylan, why don't you love this match? But I liked it a lot, but I felt like there was a lot left in the tank they left on the table. And I feel the exact same way about this match. A very good match, but it was, but not enough time.
Yeah, we have that 7.3 right now. That's about right, I would say. Next one we have at 6.97, Yo beat Rocky Romero. Pretty good match. Then the mid-card was kind of okay. Dragon Lee beat Tiger Mask. Bushi beat Doki in 7 minutes. Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
That's the one where I noted down for Juice. When they had Bushi and Doki come out, he immediately comes on. Juice says, I don't even care about this match. I don't give a rat's ass about Bushi, and I don't know Doki from a ham sandwich. I was like, I love it. I was like, I don't give a fuck about Bushi either. that was like immediately what I thought. I was like, you're right, Juice. This match sucks.
Then Yoshinobu Kanemaru started his incredible run of trying to go for count-out wins against Sho, and he did it. Oh, I love it, Dylan. I love it that you hate it. he shoved. Was it Shota Umino or was it Jota Tsuji? I don't know. He shoved a young lion in Sho's way to get the count-out victory.
What was the point of this? Like I said, to beat Sho, this was a totally unnecessary loss, I feel like.
Yeah, that was very unnecessary. I'll admit that.
Well, we'll talk about Sho more later.
We have Robbie Eagles beating Ryosuke Taguchi, 11 minutes, 6.58. And we have Shingo Takagi against Marty Scurll, 7.82. El Fantasmo against Will Ospreay, 8.49. So all of these three matches on top, you should check them out. I wasn't a big fan of the Takagi versus Skrull match, but that's not
me either.
Due to Takagi, but just Skrull.
No. Eagles, I watched far too much Skrull in this tournament.
Yeah, Eagles and Taguchi was good. In the main event, Fantasmo and Ospreay, you exactly know what you will get when you watch that match. And for me, I knew what I was getting, and I really enjoyed what I was getting with these two guys.
Yeah, I like you said, you knew what you were going to get with these two. And I got to be honest, this show, I think I was a little lower on it than a lot of people, maybe. I liked the Gresham-Titan match, even though, like I said, I thought it could have been even better. I still really liked it. You know, the other ones I thought were good, pretty much. You know, Yo and Romero, Eagles and Taguchi, I thought was solid. The main event picked it up, though. And when it comes to Ospreay and Fantasmo, this was a circle the calendar kind of match, because we saw what they did with the build-up in the tag match that Fantasmo debuted at, and we saw what Ospreay could do in this whole tournament, really. I think he did a really great job here, and I was pretty surprised to see Fantasmo actually get the win, too. So, I like that.
I was not. But still. I was not surprised that he was getting the win.
Didn't you say that was match was built for him to win, though? Like, get his win back?
Ospreay? Did I say that?
I know you picked Fantasmo to win the block.
Yeah, I did. I'm not sure.
But I think getting his win back would have made sense.
Would have made sense, but I... Okay, at least when I was watching the match, I was not surprised. That's for sure.
Fantasmo did a good job in this match. This is probably his best match of the tournament, I would say.
Like it's funny. Like Fantasmo and Ospreay both had the Rocky Romero matches, and those two stood out too.
Rocky, he's a gem. Yeah. Rocky.
I didn't mention the opening match, Taiji Shimura beat Taka in 5 minutes. And then we had Bandido going over Renarita in 6 minutes. And this was probably the best 6-minute match you will find anywhere, like this year.
Oh, man. Narita, to me, is like an MVP of this whole tournament. And always working the first two matches. I thought that was a really good match. And Narita, especially, I thought he had a lot of energy for this kind of random match, pretty mm-hmm. much, against Bandido. So Narita did a great job. Ishimori Taka, battle of two injured guys.
Yeah.
pretty much.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, this led us to the 23rd show. And this, as I said, is one of my favorite shows of the entire year. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun watching this show because this show had 10 singles matches. And the pacing of the show was so well done. It started out with Fantasmo beating Renarita in 7 minutes. Titan over Taka Michinoku, 8 minutes. Bushi over Robbie Eagles, 8 minutes. All fine matches. Then it started picking up a little bit with Gresham going over Tiger Mask in 9. And we had the first match that got 3.5 stars from Dave Meltzer. Yo going over Doki. And then Yo's tag team partner Sho beat Mari Skrull. We have that at 7.46.
I like that. Like, Skrull, like, hey, yeah. I thought that was a really good match against Sho, despite my misgivings on him.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a really good match. 7.46 from the Cagement users, 4.25 from Dave Meltzer. And then the show cut a little break. Like, we had two good matches, and then we got Taguchi against Rocky Romero in a fun match, but not like going all out with a great technical wrestling match. And then Yoshinobu Kanemaru beat Taichi Ishimori in 4 minutes. That was something different too. And this was like a little break within the show. And then we returned with two great singles matches. Will Ospreay beating Bandido 18 minutes, 8.89. And in the main event, Shingo Takagi beat Dragon Lee in possibly one of the best matches of the tournament. 17 minutes, 9.21 from the Cagement users, 4.75 from Dave Meltzer.
Oh, yeah. I thought that match was completely awesome. You know, when it comes to Shingo, Dragon Lee, you have a certain expectation. And I mentioned it before that Shingo, he had the amazing show match at the start of the tournament, but had really kind of not had a lot of super great matches since then. And I think here we saw these two, and even Dragon Lee himself as well. You know, we remember his match versus Sho. I know you didn't really like that one that much.
I didn't like it that much. That's good that you added that. I liked it, but not that much.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as you might expect, considering the two names. But here, and even the Ishimori match as well, I don't think was as good as their first match for Dragon Lee. So these two really showed out in this main event. It had, like you said, one of the best matches of the tournament. And after following Ospreay and Bandido, who did a really great job in their own right, I feel like, and then Bandido, another person that really didn't do a lot for me until that match with Ospreay, and then you have Shingo and Dragon Lee just tear the house down and kill it.
And I believe just went in with the expectation to have the best match of the tournament. I think they just expected that from one another.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, and they had great chemistry too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had all kinds of big moves in here. You had reverse Ranas. Shingo hit his apron Death Valley driver at one point. Crazy, you know, pumping bombers, things like that. Everything they could throw at each other. They pretty much went all out in this match to every extent you can imagine. And I thought it turned out to be a great match. Dragon Lee especially, I thought really, among all the people that he wrestled, Lee really did a great job of putting over Shingo's offense and bumping for him in a way that made him look spectacular, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this match,
I like that they shook hands at the start as well. I thought that was a really good touch for them.
Yeah, it has been outstanding. So the Will Ospreay and Bandido match had some absolutely crazy spots. And Bandido surely is in to have a great time and to shine in this tournament, at least in the second half.
Yeah, well, this was the first match I thought he really stepped up. We would get to another one later on. But those three matches to me, you know, I mean, I really like Shingo and Lee and Bandido and Ospreay. And you can go with Skrull and Sho as well. So that three-peat of matches really, you know, it was a big show, and Corquin really responded well to these guys, too. It felt like a big deal, not just necessarily the match quality.
Yeah, and that's really the thing that it comes down to. It felt like a big deal. This tournament doesn't feel like something they do before the G1 Climax. This really feels like its own thing now, with two more guys added to the tournament, 10 guys in each block, really high stakes, great performers from all around the world. This really feels like it means something.
Yeah, totally. And I really love that they did, for the Corken Hall shows, they had everybody wrestle pretty much. They had all tournament matches. I think that's a better format than the 5 versus 5 or whatever. Not for business perspective, but besides that, just from an entertainment perspective, I'd rather watch a show with all of this than a bunch of meaningless tag matches on the undercard.
Yeah, so like the next show, 24th of May, also was a very good show. And while I would say that the main event of the 23rd with Shingo and Dragon Lee was more spectacular and more fast-paced, hard-hitting, I'd say that the main event of this show, Rocky Romero going to 4 points against El Fantasmo, who at that point had been unbeaten, was a great emotional roller coaster, and we have it at 9.06 right now. It blew me away, Dylan. I absolutely loved this underdog story. And for El Fantasmo, this was the first match of him that I saw where I really understood what New Japan saw in him or is seeing in him. Because he went into Korakuen Hall and he immediately, I think Voices of Wrestling put it that way, he immediately owned the room. He was this great dick heel, and Rocky Romero on the other side, the beloved underdog babyface, perfect story, great match.
Yeah, I thought they did a lot of things right in this match, and I think Rocky has been a standout of this whole tournament, definitely one of the top tiers of B-Block, in my opinion. But this match, I thought they did a lot of really good stuff. Overall, I didn't really like the stuff where, you know, he landed on the ref and grabbed the title and all that stuff at the end. Yeah, like, I could have done without all that stuff. And that took it down a notch. But still, Rocky getting this win. And to be honest with you, I was kind of thought that this might just end up going to a draw because they were right on the cusp of it. They only had a minute, pretty much. But to see Rocky get the win anyway was really cool. I thought it a great, unexpected win. On here, because I didn't think Rocky would win this, but he did, and I think they did an absolutely fantastic job of, like you said, really playing with the emotions, even if I didn't like everything about the shenanigans, but the emotion of the match and Rocky's work as well, I thought was really clean, as he always has been this whole tournament. I think they worked really well together when they turned it up, and yeah, a great match, I thought. I didn't love it as much as some people, but I still thought it was a really strong match. I actually liked another match on this show a little better.
Which one is it? Let me guess. Okay, I'll say Mari's Girl against Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
No. Like I said, definitely not that one. That one and Bushi and Yo bored me to tears. On there. But Osprey and Narita, I thought, was like one of the best sprint matches I've seen in long time. I thought that was like an unbelievable, you know, I think this went only 8 minutes.
8:45, but it felt like, but it ruled, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, great match. 8-9 minutes, but still absolutely phenomenal work from Narita again, and Osprey with another banger of a match. And like I said, this was only the second match on the show, but that to me was just an unbelievable performance. But Fantasma and Romero, and Rocky getting the win and having them come out for him afterwards, RPG 3K, that was just a great moment. That had all the spectacle moments of it. Narita and Osprey, unfortunately, will probably be forgotten by the end of this tournament. But still, I thought it was a really strong match. And Lee Titan, too. This was a great show.
I was just going to ask you what your assessment of Dragon Lee and Titan was, because I thought that this was the one match where Titan actually brought his working boots.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know how this all happened or whatever reason it was, because Titan was really coming in on a hot run in CMLL and having great matches and things. But to me, a lot of A-Block has underperformed for one reason or another, for my lofty expectations. of them, but he's definitely right at the top of the list of people that I like I said, disappointments might not even be the right word for some of these guys.
I'd say for Titan, I think the word disappointment is right, because we know how great he is, and the way he performed was just not the level that we're used to seeing him.
Yeah. I think you could point the finger at a few guys in A block, but he's definitely near the top of the list. But like you said, I think this match, maybe it's his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned it earlier with Moxley. Now that he's in with a guy he knows really well, they've had plenty of matches before. The crowd was hotter for this match than most of his other matches as well. It felt like the crowd was really behind them. Lee delivered yet again. He really got over with the crowd. Titan worked perfectly with him. I thought it was a really strong semi-main event. As a match, I think you could even argue match of the night caliber. But, you know, I thought they did a really great job, both of that match. But Titan, definitely just not... he didn't have the tournament that I was hoping for, or thought he would.
Yeah, same. There were some other matches on this show we haven't mentioned yet. In the opening match, Show beat Tiger Mask in 8 minutes. Pretty good match, too. We had Robbie Eagles against Doki. This really was the first match where Doki showed more than just his heel shtick with Taichi. He started wrestling, and once he started wrestling, he was actually pretty decent.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I have to say, at the end of all of this, Doki, he's not the worst person in the tournament.
Absolutely, you know? Not.
And I mentioned it on the last show. Basically, that I felt early on that he had never wrestled in any kind of buildings like this, any kind of fans like this, and I think he might have had some nerves mm-hmm. that affected him early on. I think the Taguchi match was destined to fail no matter what, just because of how they booked it, and that was a terrible match, but not necessarily
I
because
liked
of
it.
His talent. You liked it. to me, I thought it was just an awful match, and I had to say Doki did not impress me at all. And like I said, I always say this because everybody kind of craps on him because of his look and his character, but I actually think it's good because it makes him stand out, and I've always said that.
He's a guy from the Indies, and he looks like a guy from the Indies.
Yeah, like I said, you know, like you said, and this match was a tale of him. When he did the dirty stuff with the chair, I wasn't necessarily into it, but when they tried to do a little bit of wrestling, it was a solid match. It wasn't spectacular, but definitely better than Skrull and Kanemaru.
High praise here.
You see, even you know that stuff. So, it was honestly like the whole tournament though. Doki has not been that bad later on. I think we should slap the terrible label off him based on this tournament.
Sadly, we saw Takamichi Noku's last match here as he got beaten by Shingo Takagi. But up until that point. In the 7 minutes that they had, I thought Taka brought a great fight to Shingo Takagi, and I didn't really expect him. Taka lost to Taiji Ishimori in 5 minutes the day before, so I expected Shingo to beat him more handily, but Taka really brought it to Shingo, and he had to work for the victory.
I liked that match. I thought they did a great job, actually. Maybe it was because he brought out the old school gear that... it drew my nostalgic tendencies because he was one of my favorite wrestlers as a child in this attire. The original, or not the original, but the WWF version of the Kai and Tai that he was in. I was all for this. He was doing a lot of his moves like the Just Face Lock and things like that. So I really enjoyed this match a lot, actually. It was sad to see him go. But there is a question I have for you because you kind of brought it up. I think we need to backtrack for a second. How do you think they've handled, and what do you think of how they've handled this Ishimori situation? Because after his injury, essentially, all his matches are very, very short, except for his main events.
Let me see. Yeah. Well, he got injured in his second match against Mighty Skrull, is that correct?
Oh god, that match was awful.
I think Kevin Kelly mentioned he got injured in his second tournament match. That would have been the Marty Skrull match. Oh. He had the match with Titan that was 12 minutes. And then, or maybe it happened in the Titan match because every match after that was short. 5 minutes against Taka, Kanemaru 4 minutes, 7 minutes against Gresh, and then 20 minutes with Sho, 4 minutes with Tiger Mask, and today the long match with Shingo Takagi in 20 minutes too. So, like, they had so many guys going out of the tournament in the first place, with El Desperado and Flip Gordon needing to be replaced, then Taka Michinoku was out of the tournament. I think Taichi Ishimura, just for his own sake, wanted to remain in the tournament because he saw that there are guys like Shingo Takagi and Dragon Lee, Show, for that matter too, who are putting on great performances, and he doesn't want to be left behind. And so I think this was the best thing they could do.
Yeah. It kind of hurt his matches because...
Yeah, sure, it
was,
it did,
really...
but...
But not just for because they were shorter or because they protected him.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is it hurt him because all of his matches were so obvious that he would have to win with how they booked Show and Dragon Lee, pretty much. So there was really no way he could go under more than one
match.
That's
a very unfortunate situation right now.
Yeah, like I said. What's the unfortunate situation?
Yeah, that he had to keep winning these matches. And even though he was not in the physical condition to impress in those situations.
Yeah, it just kind of made the whole tournament... It wasn't a good look, in my opinion.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, like, and not just for him, but like the tournament as a whole. It made the whole thing look very, like, you know, if you wanted to suspend your disbelief, it just made it look great.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I didn't like that at all. I wish they had done something else, to be honest.
Yeah, but what should have they done?
They could have avoided all this in the first place, first of all, by having Show and Shingo be the final, like I told you at the start.
Yeah.
But, like I said, that's what should have happened. But, considering where we're at, when it comes to Ishimori, like you mentioned, they were just in a tough spot. The only thing I could have imagined them doing is taking him out and reshuffling the deck in terms of matches.
I don't know.
But there was just the only one it could have been was Dragon Lee. You know, I feel like at the moment, because they really didn't push Show at all in this tournament.
Yeah, and
that
would have fucked up the entire block because Taichi Ishimori had beaten Dragon Lee on the first day, and Taka was already out.
Yeah.
So,
they were in a tough spot. There's no doubt, but I just don't like how they did it. Like for person, like you know, it's not. I'm not trying to put the blame on.
I think in their mind, in their thinking, there was no other way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been tough. Like, you know, I can't even think of a particularly better way. But I think how it turned out, it didn't make things right. Or they could have just had the block be decided, you know, already. Here's what they could have done: they could have had someone else go in with only one, something that they could have, you know, had a chance pretty much on the last day. If they could have worked that out somehow. But that would have been tough, too, because Shingo would have had to beat them.
Yeah,
so.
the thing is, Dylan, what it comes down to is that Show lost so often in the early shows.
I don't know why.
Yeah, me neither. I don't know.
Yeah, that was... I'm telling you, like I said, they missed an opportunity with that Show and Shingo final match. That crowd would have been going nuts if he was... And I mean, not that...
And I was so sure that they were going to do that before the tournament. Yeah.
We were all wrong, I guess. But anyway, though, Ishimori did deliver in his main events, at least, pretty much. So that's something. But I just didn't like how they hit.
Yeah, so it's the second show. Well, the third show from Korakuen Hall. Yeah, well, then we took a little downtime. The next show from Makuhari was not so spectacular. They had all tournament matches again. 9 of them, because Taka Michinoku was out, Dragon Lee got the forfeit victory, and to be honest, this show wasn't anything special. Robbie Eagles against Ospreay was good for the drama, and Taichi Ishimori against Show was pretty good, although I don't know why the match had to be so long, considering Taichi Ishimori's injury situation.
Yeah, you know, I don't know either. Like, that's a great question. Really, the only explanation is it was the main event. that's the real reason, ultimately. But I thought it was still a pretty good match. Maybe it wouldn't have been as great as it maybe would have been otherwise, but still, I thought it was solid. I thought the Eagles and Ospreay match was a little bit better, and that's kind of surprising. on paper, Ishimori and Sho would be a dream match for me, or a spectacular match, but it never got there, and it's just one of those things. But like you said, the show as a whole, it was pretty decent. There was nothing too terrible on it. Even the Kanemaru match was with Gresham, so it was actually kind of okay, so nothing bad, but nothing special either, I would say, on that show.
What I noted was that El Fantasmo looked like a damn idiot losing his match to Yo, playing to the crowd all the time, and not taking Yo seriously, getting rolled up in the end. I liked it.
That didn't really put over Yo either.
I know. But that led to El Fantasmo coming out in the semi-main, rooting for Robbie Eagles, who didn't want Fantasmo to be there.
Yeah.
And who didn't want Fantasmo's assistance at all. And Dylan, here we are, 2019. Frictions within the Bullet Club.
Awesome. Bullet Club centric storylines. Always my. The thing is, I've always hated it. So, even if it was the first time, I was the original Bullet Club hater. So this
I have the reputation, and I say that about myself, that I tend to trust New Japan very much so. And I did with the Bullet Club storyline last year. I remember myself saying that everybody is in on the Bullet Club storyline. As it turned out, things were very different. And like the one good thing, Dylan, about this is, like, Robbie Eagles could maybe leave Bullet Club because they have too many juniors right now, so one has to leave.
Yeah, and, you know.
Like, they brought in Ishimori specifically for that. They brought in Fantasmo specifically for that with two, well, big-time presentations. And, like, Robbie Eagles has to be, like, the weak link in that scenario, I believe.
So, I guess. Yeah. Eagles, they're getting behind him, I feel like, with the storyline. They have some kind of plan for him.
Yeah, and I gotta say, with this, with these matches that he had, I kind of start to understand Robbie Eagles a little bit more. Still not sold, but I kind of get around.
I'm warming up to him.
Yeah,
I think we're on the same page with him. We've always kind of felt the same about him, that a lot of people really put him over hard, but we're just now getting to warm up on him. So let's see what he can do with this push, pretty much. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't know really what they've got planned overall in the grand scheme of things, but it seems like with Fantasmo here, Robbie's out, and we'll see how it goes from there. And also they could do something where maybe Robbie and Ospreay form a tag team of some sort as well, which they kind of set up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. So, but this show actually was the day after Double or Nothing. And Juice Robinson on that show said that he thought he knew who the guy behind the video is. And Juice said, I'm not the same guy anymore. And he told the guy to bring his ass to Ryogoku. This was the day where he walked off. So he knew. Yeah.
He should have made like a very wrong guess. Like cut a big promo on somebody.
It's Rusev.
Rusev. Yeah. Kevin Owens. Like I said, I broke your nose once, I'll do it again, motherfucker.
From this show, like, really, the Robbie Eagles and Will Ospreay match is the only thing that you really have to see.
Yeah, it was a solid match. The last two matches were solid, but it was fine.
3-day break again. New Japan returned to Nagoya for day 11 of the tournament, and this day only had four matches, and the only one that was on the verge of being very good was Shingo Takagi against Jonathan Gresham, but again, ended in 11 minutes, and I don't know why, but it did.
And, like, there was no reason for it.
There was absolutely no reason for it. This show was not going long.
No. Like I said, you had one match that went 0 minutes because Girl and Taka, and another one that went 4 minutes because Ishimori can't, he's struggling along, dragging his ass along in the ring. Yeah. So you've got all this extra time, that you could give to somebody. And even the main...
Yeah, exactly. Even the main event only went 14 minutes.
Yeah, so why are they fading Gresham like this? I don't understand. like I said, he's like the most disappointing person in the tournament through no fault of his own.
Like, you know,
won't give him chances.
As I was teasing before, I'm going to say it right now. Yeah. Unlike Titan, Gresham is making the most out of the stuff he's been given.
He just hasn't been given.
but he's at least he's trying to leave an impression, and I think he did. Because the crowd really took to him. Even though he hasn't been in situations where he was able to over-deliver. I really think that the crowd understands what he brings to the table, and they like it. And by saying that, again, I don't understand why they couldn't give him more. Like, why couldn't they give him 4 or 5 minutes more in this match here?
Here's my conspiracy theory.
Oh, God.
Ring of Honor told them, they say, look, we have this great wrestler. We book him like shit all the time. Can't book him good either. So make sure all his matches go very short. And he's going to do great in them, so don't let him go too long. 10 minutes, 11 minutes at most, buddy.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened. We can't have him outshining us. We can't have this guy blowing up New Japan, because then we'd have to push him. And we don't do that. We don't do that here. We have Matt Taven.
Like the great Ring of Honor booking committee calling New Japan after what they did in MSG.
Calling in a favor right now. Listen, we'll give you Gresham. We know you love him. Everybody thinks he's awesome. But you gotta book him our way. And he doesn't even have to win very many matches. So put over all your own guys. It's fine. But just don't let him wrestle too long. That's my conspiracy theory right now. Because, like I said, this really made no sense not to give them more time, I feel like. And he would have, and if they had, really any of his matches, if they had given him that much time, he would have blown up the tournament and had an amazing match. So I just think it's maybe that's disappointing because there were so many missed opportunities left on the table.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Let's forget that show. Let's go to the one from yesterday from Osaka, where we had at least 3 matches that you could check out. First of which is Yo against Renarita. 12 minutes,
yeah.
22, where, like, Renarita, Dylan, again, I feel like this is Pokemon. Because
what?
Renarita is picking up so much experience points right now that he will end up being one of the front runners for the Young Lions. Maybe he will even overtake Shota Umino. Because he has so much experience in this tournament right now, in these singles matches against those great wrestlers, that I can see him being in a position where he could get a win over a senior in the Young Lions division.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, him and Umino are kind of the top dogs right now of the division. I think Narita is just a great worker already. I think very highly of him already in-ring. And he's somebody that I have pegged. When he comes back after his excursion, whenever that goes down, I think he's going to really be somebody. Maybe not even the biggest star, because you can never tell how that's going to go with these things.
Yeah, but he's going to be a great worker.
Yeah, but as an in-ring performer, I feel the same way about him as I did about Sho, like before he left. And everybody, I know a lot of people like Yohei better, but I always thought Sho was better. So Narita, and now even now, a lot of people now too think Umino is better as well, but I actually think Narita is the best worker of all of the Young Lions. And let me ask you this, because this was a good match. And here with Yo, Narita getting to work a variety of opponents. Which way do you think is better for these young guys? Would it be Narita in the Best of Super Juniors, getting experience against a variety of guys, or Umino wrestling Tanahashi and getting a big match like that? Which one do you think is better?
I'd say wrestling a wide variety of guys is much better for a young wrestler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, I think it helped him in ring. But yeah. I mean, obviously, I think either way, I think both have positives too. I think
For Shota Umino, it only was one match.
But also, that one match is probably more memorable to a lot of people than a lot of these Narita matches.
That's true.
Even though to me, Narita's been great. I think Narita's been great.
That wasn't your question, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But I'm just playing devil's advocate at this moment, because I agree with you ultimately. And that Narita Osprey match was like awesome. I think that was even better than the Tanahashi match. But still, Narita, good match. Yo, Man, what do you think of him in this tournament?
Ah, well, not very good.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Like, he... It's weird. Like, show, he gets his moments, but it always feels like when Yo gets a victory, it's not because of him, but it's because of the other guy screwing up.
Yeah.
Or being Young Lion, for that matter.
Yes, yes. Did he beat Dookie? Like I said, I think he did.
He lost to Bushi. I hated that.
Yeah, lost to Bushi. Yeah, you weren't a big fan of that one?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the never-ending Los Ingobernables versus Roppongi 3K storyline. He beat Doki, yeah. He beat him.
Yeah, okay, yeah, he beat Doki. Okay, so Yo, not a standout performer in this tournament. And remember our first episode, he was the last guy we even thought of to talk about in this whole tournament. So Yo, just to me, he's really just a guy right now in this tournament and this promotion. But I thought the match with Naruto was definitely, and that and the match with Osprey were his two best matches, in my opinion.
Yeah, and like the great wide range of performers in this tournament was very visible here in the next match, because Yo and Ren Narita was like mat based around grappling, and the next match was not. With Bandido against Robbie Eagles in 9 minutes. We have it at 3.75 from Dave Meltzer. No, 2 ratings from Cage Match right now, 7.0 ratings both. So I thought it was a good match, very enjoyable, and again, showed how versatile all of these wrestlers in the tournament are. And again, to your question, this makes a young wrestler much better if he wrestles so many different opponents.
Yeah, exactly, and I totally agree with that statement there. And this match, I thought, was a very solid match. Didn't go 10 minutes, and that's for the better for these two, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think they got everything they needed to in this match, and it was a good, like you said, good counter to the opening match. You had the mat work, and now you have the high-speed matches. I actually really enjoyed these matches on Night 12. I don't think anything was great, but I think everything was at least really good. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the next match, but even that was not bad.
Dylan, the finish of this match, the reverse fallaway slam moonsault, that was crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah, the one man Spanish fly, but different style that he does it. Bandido, this move that he's invented or at least adopted, is awesome. And Bandito's got some stuff that he's a very creative worker. You know, not everything he does is very realistic sometimes, but something like this is just a very impressive move, this fall-away moonsault press that he's got going on here. So shout-out to Bandito for that awesome finisher there, because like I said, some of his moves aren't always my favorites, but that one is really cool and very, very impressive physically as well.
Yeah, he calls it the Versa Guerrero moonsault. That's at least what New Japan told me.
Okay.
Next up, Bushi beat Rocky Romero with the MX in a very Bushi match.
Yeah.
Isn't that what it was? It was Bushi.
Yeah. Yeah, Bushi, you know what you're going to get. not good wrestling when he shows up. But Rocky, though, you know, I think Rocky got as much as he could out of him. This wasn't, for Bushi standards, I thought this was a good match, but definitely the worst of the five, in my opinion.
Doki had his best tournament match, without a doubt, against Will Ospreay. And Dylan, I don't think there is any doubt that Will Ospreay is the most outstanding wrestler in this tournament.
I mean, who hasn't had their best match versus Ospreay in this tournament? We just mentioned it with Yo.
Well,
that was his best match as well.
I had the same discussion with Jamesy earlier, and I believe you could make a case for Rocky Romero, because
yeah,
the Phantasmo match was great too.
Yeah, you really love that Phantasmo match. You know, Rocky, I definitely think, is up there overall with his performances and things like that. But I think the tiebreaker, whose match with Bushi was better, Rocky's or Ospreay's? To me, I have to go with Ospreay.
Yeah.
So that's my time on there. You know, Bushi is the, you know, he's the lion that we all compare him to. But I thought this was definitely Dookie's best match, though. Good effort from him, and Ospreay did really good. I think they both, you know, when it comes to Rocky and Ospreay, I think they both have done a great job. The thing about Rocky, I think, that would make you maybe side with him more is that Ospreay, he gets praised all the time pretty much for being a great wrestler by so many people. And Rocky is kind of underrated. People don't, you know, when he got announced for this tournament, a lot of people are saying, oh, why is Rocky in this tournament? He's a manager. Like, you know, but now in Block B, he's been one of the main standouts of the tournament to me. I also think Narita should be up there, but that's just my opinion. There, I'm just thinking that he should be an MVP candidate too. But to me, Rocky has done a great job, and they're more unexpected than Ospreay, who everyone already rates, or like a lot of people already rate as one of the top performers.
Yeah. It was weird because the main event of that show should have been that match.
Yeah.
But it was Ryosuke Taguchi beating El Fantasmo, thus eliminating El Fantasmo from competition unless something very weird happens. So there is a like 0.5% chance of Fantasmo still advancing. Like, Ospreay and Taguchi both have 12 points, and Taguchi has the direct victory over Fantasmo. But if they do a no contest between Ospreay and Taguchi, or a double count, or double DQ, whatever, they both stay at 12, and if Fantasmo wins, he is at 12, and then they could go back to their weird three-way stuff they did for the Junior Tag League, but I don't think they will do that.
Oh, brother.
I'm just saying, this has happened before. It's happened before.
Not like this, though. Not like not this. Where somebody let's ran it. Yeah, not
so
let, you know,
yeah,
or,
so or, let's say he's eliminated from competition. It was a goofy comedy match for the first half of it, then it picked up a little, ended with Taguchi going over. It was fine.
It was fine. You know, Taguchi, he's another one that I always kind of have higher expectations. I always think he's something to sleep on. But this tournament hasn't been his best work, in my opinion.
Yeah, no. It's definitely not. So, yeah, that's the show from Osaka. Don't think we missed anything.
Nope. Those were the five matches.
Today's show... Oh, we haven't today's show in the database yet, so I'm going for Perloff. We again had four tournament matches. And in the most visible, I don't know how to put it, moment of the tournament for Titan that described his tournament the best was his victory against Tiger Mask, where everything was screwed up in the end, and he was so frustrated in the end.
I know.
Oh, boy. I felt sad for him in that situation.
See, I you were kind of saying earlier, you were talking about how Gresham's different because he's trying and trying to make the best. I think Titan's trying.
I think in this match he really tried to leave a good impression in his last match.
Yeah, I think he's tried. He just hasn't been that great. That's the heart is there, but the execution is what's been lacking, and especially in this match, the finish of this match. And Tiger, I think he's somebody that. You know what you're going to get with him, pretty much. And here, everything was going along pretty much as I expected. And then, like you said, they just was not able to pull off the finish, which was kind of like fighting off the Tiger suplex and then going into his move, the cradle that he does. And it just didn't really... It got all messed up, pretty much.
Yeah. Got all messed up. Man.
Poor Titan.
But then we had a good match with Sho and Gresham.
Yep.
Again, nothing that set the world on fire, but Sho got the victory over Gresham, going up to 10 points. Still in a weird position. Like, he's the fourth guy in this tournament, and the other guys are clearly much way ahead of him, with Dragon Lee, Ishimori, and Takagi. I don't know. We've talked about it here. It feels weird that he is... Like, he got this new music and everything, and he felt like that he would be more than a 10-point guy in a 10-man block.
He looks like a star.
He does.
You know, that's the thing. He wrestles like a star, obviously, but his presence is really strong. I think he's done everything you would want him to do.
Like, what do you make of his moves that he does? Like, he does this weird cross-arm pile driver that almost looks like his finishing move.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
That has to go.
Yeah.
And
I like...
And the powerbomb over the knees, the Project Champa.
Yeah.
That looks so much better than the Shock Arrow.
I know. Like, I totally, I was just about to say that. I was like, I was literally about to bring that move up. The Project Show, I guess you could call it. I think that's a great move. Totally looks devastating. And the pile driver, to me, the package pile driver is one of those moves. Like, I will never do that move. Because to me, it's such an indie move that everybody has done. It's
the Canadian Destroyer of 2019.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, another version of the Canadian Destroyer. Like, for a long time, the Diamond Cutter or the RKO was like that. Everybody in the indies had
still
that
is,
move.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, Sliced Bread, another move that's super indie. I don't like it. You know, I would never do a move like that. So to me, I would get rid of that crap. And like you said, do rename it whatever you want to call it. You know, the electric chair, I guess. That's a different...
Hey, I got a perfect name for it. You named it Project Show. Let's go for Showject.
Showject. You're on a roll right now between Mark Slay and Showject. You're killing it right now, Stringer. I love it. But yeah, awesome. Definitely. Showject, I'm all on board for that. But yeah.
Yeah, but you know, because Show is jacked too.
I listen. Fantastic shape. He does not miss the gym very much at all. What do you think of his music, his video game music that he has?
Is he a video game guy? I don't know.
He has a backwards cap that he wears. You know, so he must be.
He's a cool kid.
I mean, you know. I said he rules the school. I'm sure. You know, when he was training, everybody wanted.
I'm very sure about that.
Yeah, everyone loved Sho. He was the coolest guy. He got all the ladies. He dated a cheerleader when he was in high school. You know, I'd love to know. Yes, Space Invaders. Yeah, sure. That's what it kind of sounds like. It's not like an epic video game. It's like an old style video game, kind of like a. TJ Perkins, old thing, pretty much.
Oh god, now we're digging deep here.
future tag team if TJP ever comes back.
What did you think about Dragon Lee and Mighty Skrull? First of all, I was glad that Mighty Skrull didn't beat Dragon Lee.
Yeah, the Skrull is far from my favorite. Let's just say that in this tournament. You know, but to be fair, this wasn't a bad match.
Yeah,
I thought it went a little long. But
actually, it didn't. It was 40 minutes long.
Yeah, 14, 15, 16. Like it was
no,
still
14.
I had it at 16. Like I said, I think you need to check your accounting. Right,
that's
now,
at least what the New Japan side told me today. Let me see.
I said, well, listen, they're working. They're trying to make Marty look better with these short. But no, either way though, like I no matter what time it was, it still felt a little long. But maybe that's just. Anytime
oh, now they changed
it
to 16. You're right.
See? Yeah. This is, come on, String. Like you said, you gotta keep your mind right.
No,
on this,
they totally had 14 earlier when I checked it.
Yeah, they had you fooled, but I knew better because I timed it myself. Because I'm prepared for you, just like after last time. I prepared for your
always
timing question.
Always come prepared.
Yeah, that's right. Always prepared. But anyway, this I still thought it was a pretty solid match. Definitely one of Skrull's best. I'd probably say the Show match was the best one, but this was a good one as well.
Yeah. And then we have.
Did you like how he said, I'm going to try to do this Lucha stuff early on? Well, when he went to commentary?
Yeah, let's not talk about that. We had that block deciding match, the big one, Shingo Takagi against Taiji Ishimori. Well, they went all out. Taiji Ishimori didn't hold back here. And I especially liked about this match that, of course, Taiji Ishimori has the crossface lock as his finishing move, and they still, for whatever reason, they still call it the yes lock. I have no idea why, but they do.
Listen, as we know, Ishimori is a huge environmentalist and has clearly been bringing this over to New Japan.
Clearly.
And they could be friends. They wrestled in NOAH and stuff. Maybe they have some kind of relationship in Ring of Honor, NOAH, and all that. And I don't know. Maybe he's just a big fan. But it doesn't make sense for his character.
No?
No.
But what I was going to say is that he has this crossface lock as his finishing move. And clearly he has a neck issue from earlier in the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
So in this match, he wanted Shingo Takagi to feel the same pain. And he attacked his neck throughout the entire match. And I really like that. That they didn't only go for the high-risk stuff or for the high-octane stuff, like when they did a Canadian Destroyer and Shingo bounced right back and did the lariat. It was cool. But the match was not about these spots. It was about Taiji Ishimori trying hard to beat Shingo Takagi and trying to target his neck. And I thought that Shingo Takagi sold the neck very well. Overall, Shingo Takagi just had an answer for everything that Taiji Ishimori did, like he did for mostly everybody in this tournament, and he beat him handily with the Last of the Dragon in the end. Didn't really had to fight out of very precarious situations. He was in the crossface lock once, but I didn't really buy that he would tap out. So Shingo Takagi going undefeated against Taiji Ishimori, who stays at 14. I thought this match was great.
I thought it was a great match, first of all. Probably my second favorite of the tournament behind Shingo and Sho.
Yep. But, Shingo and Dragon Lee, maybe, too.
That was a good match. Like I said, they're all up there, you know, like if you can pick whichever one you want. you want as your favorite, but I'd probably put this a little ahead of that, but just slightly. But still, great match, I thought, great main event, especially for a guy who was dealing with these injuries that he could work like 4 minutes in most of his matches. Here he goes all out against Shingo, and I actually really love the finishing stretch, because if you remember, before the Last of the Dragon, Ishimori was firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. He hit this, Ishimori came down, but he popped up with a knee strike and then a huge lariat on Shingo, which I thought was great. He hit a big drop kick, the running knee strike, and then the lung blower that he does, that I thought was great, and he set him up for the Bloody Cross, but he fought it off, and then that's what led to the Last of the Dragon. So I think they did a good job making Ishimori as believable as possible, even though I think we all kind of assumed that Shingo was going to go into the finals here. So I think they did a good job building up drama. I like the storyline of the stuff with the Yes Lock and the Tilt World into it. So I think everything you want out of a match, this match hit on all of those cylinders. A really strong end to A-Block, in my opinion. And even though Ishimori had a disappointing tournament because of his injury, he stood out here yet again.
And that's really to his credit, right? So this match checked all boxes.
Yeah.
Like, check this out. Certainly one of the best of the tournament. Yep. Top three, I'd say.
Yeah,
so this concludes the tournament as we have it right now. Block A is done. Shingo Takagi, the obvious winner of the block, going through without a defeat. He's going to be in the finals on June 6th from Ryogoku. Other matches than that are Juice Robinson versus John Moxley for the US title and Hiroshi Tanahashi's return match against Jay White. But before we go here and leave the best of the Super Junior, Dylan, we have two questions from Jamesy. And first of all, he wants us to discuss who of the imports, who of the guys that New Japan has brought in, could we see becoming New Japan regulars?
First of all, shout outs to Jamesy.
Yep.
Thank you guys for the question.
Like I call him Bad Take Jamesy today, because he said that he is not enjoying the Shingo Takagi matches as most people are. So shout out to him.
Well, I might have. I kind of thought he was disappointing early on, to be honest, after the show match. But I think he picked it up with these last couple. I think you got to give him props for this Ishimori match. I didn't like that Kanemaru match either, Jamesy. So I agree with you somewhat. So the foreigners that they're bringing in, I think Phantasmo and Robbie Eagles will be regulars. I think the other ones will go back to their countries, pretty much. And I think Lee will stay until he loses the title, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah. The other ones will all go back.
What about Gresham?
He's going back to Ring of Honor.
Hmm.
They didn't even push him in this tournament.
I can see them bringing in Bandido for the Super Junior Tag League again.
Oh, yeah, like coming back for another run. Hmm. Like, yeah, they can bring any of these guys, really.
But, like, they have so many guys right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
then there's just no room. Like Gresham, like, he's fantastic. Like, in my New Japan, he would be there. But just...
Like, the thing is, they just brought in Phantasmo. And yep. Focused very heavily on him.
Yep.
So, and you have to keep in mind that over the summer, the junior heavyweights, they don't exist.
Yeah.
At least up until October. Maybe there is going to be a junior heavyweight title match at the G1 final show. Who knows?
They also might have one in Dallas.
Yeah. And that leads us to the next question that Jamesy has, because he looks to the future here, and a little bit far into the future. Based on what you've seen in the tournament, what do you think is the junior heavyweight title match at Wrestle Kingdom? Do you want to go first?
I can go first. Okay. There's a lot of different moving parts in this, you know, because I think there's a lot of things that we haven't exactly had answered yet. In particular, what's up with Ospreay? Is he a junior or is he a heavyweight?
I believe he's not going to be a junior at the end of the year.
And that's very possible. That's my point of last time, though. Losing the Phantasmo, moving up.
Yep.
Those two things don't correlate with me.
That's how it is in wrestling. Losing something to move up to the bigger things.
That's how it is in New Japan, yeah, but not... And I don't think that's a good thing, but yeah, that is how they push people a lot, losing up. Ospreay, though, yeah, I think it's very possible he's a heavyweight. We don't know for sure, though, because we thought he was a heavyweight already, and things have not gone as expected. So I think you can't fully count on that yet.
Yeah, like in my estimation, Ospreay is out of the window for Wrestle Kingdom and the junior title.
That's fine. I think did you think he was going to be a Best Super Juniors after he won Never?
No, I did not.
Mm-hmm. Me either, like I said, but here we are. That's what I'm saying. Like, you can't say for sure because we don't really know what they think of him and what's going on with him fully. They're putting a lot behind Phantasmo and Robbie Eagles right now. I can see that being something they could go to. But for now, I think Shingo is not going to be pushed as a heavyweight this year.
Nope.
I think he'll have the title before the Dome. Who will he defend against?
So,
yeah.
In my estimation, there is only one match to do, because they didn't really highlight it in this tournament. And in my opinion, it should be Shingo and Sho.
I think that makes perfect sense. You know, going forward,
like building it for 6 more months after Sho has lost the match, will only create more drama and more intensity.
Exactly, and. Maybe Sho could even be in the streak if they wanted to end the title.
That would be the perfect moment for Shingo Takagi to move up.
Sure. Like I said, that would be great. Like, I would love everything about that. Like, what you just described to me is the most perfect traditional booking you could have.
Yeah.
You built Shingo up so good, then his rival, that's an underdog compared to him, gets the huge win on the biggest stage, finally dethroning the monster champion. That is perfect to me. I think that's what I'm going to go with on there. I will give you an alternative because we have a certain time bomb that has not been mentioned in a while.
That's true.
And he's somebody... My conspiracy, and I'm going to bring you another conspiracy right now on him. I've said from the beginning that I think he should be in G1. Especially when it comes to the Dallas show. Put him in there with somebody big, tickets will move, in my opinion. He's that big of a star. But... He could always. There's very likely he could go back to a junior. There's no reason he wouldn't. And if he is back by whenever, where we don't know the schedule, but I think it's very possible that he shows up later on in the year and challenges the junior heavyweights if he's not coming back. In a star-making position like that, I could see him coming out and challenging Shingo. And they already have a pre-made storyline with LIJ as well, and one of them breaking off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the two options. Show or Hiromu versus Shingo.
Yeah.
I think Hiromu...
I like both scenarios, Dylan, but just for the storyline's sake of it, I like the Shingo and Sho one better.
That's true. You know, like I said, I think Hiromu's better off. He's done all he can do. Like, what will him versus Shingo really accomplish for Hiromu?
Yeah.
More or less. Other than having a great match. But Sho and Shingo, that accomplishes a lot, in fact. So I'm with you. I think Shingo and Sho is the way to go, ultimately. And if you want Shingo to move up next year, he'll have a free reign. And they, in, you know, if anything, maybe they could just do something really quick in the February show and then have him enter the New Japan Cup afterwards. The timeline fits up really perfectly for him to jump right after that. So I'm fully with you. I think we figured it out. Shingo and Sho at the Dome.
So, yeah. Well, that concludes our questions for this show. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up for the tournament?
The tournament itself was, you know, obviously we're missing the B-Block show, but I think we all know Ospreay. Taguchi's in the finals versus Shingo.
Yeah, and that's your final that you picked.
Yeah, Ospreay and Shingo, yeah. I went chalk with that one. I thought what they've done with Ospreay is very interesting, though, because in my version, I thought they would push him even stronger and have him... it would be the Battle of the Undefeateds, was my idea. And the winner could be in the G1. I think that would be a very interesting match. But now I just think Shingo should just win, ultimately. You know, in my opinion, I don't think there's any doubt that Shingo should just win. What about you?
Yeah, Shingo. I think he should go all the way.
Yeah. No reason to...
Beat Dragon Lee.
Yeah, me too.
So, no question about it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Ospreay beating him would be... would not help him.
No, would be a step back for both guys, and they don't need that right now.
Yeah, exactly. So Shingo gets the win, and the tournament, they've had some high highs. Like I said, a lot of guys have honestly disappointed me for one reason or another. It could be injury, not getting enough time, bad chemistry with people, 9 Marty Scurll matches.
Dylan, you know, you don't have to watch these. Like, this tournament has been so, as I said, such a wide range of styles and different guys, different characters that you could really choose from it. And that's one of the very positive sides of this tournament, I believe, that there was so much to pick from and so much to dive into that I would say this was a pretty good tournament. But again, totally true that there were lows and guys that have been disappointments.
And a lot of that, too, is just my own high expectations.
Yeah.
That ate a lot.
Yeah, and I was thinking that maybe Dragon Lee, maybe Titan is a disappointment to me because I had so high expectations going in.
Yeah.
Because from the start, it was pretty clear that he wasn't going to be in contention in the end. But still, I would have loved to see him in better matches.
Yeah, I figured that he wouldn't win that much, but I thought he would have great matches. And a lot of his main opponents really, like I said, Ishimori would have been one of his top opponents, but something didn't go right, an injury of some sort, maybe. We don't know, pretty much. Dragon Lee, he stepped up in, but everyone else, he really didn't deliver as much as we thought. But like I said, I don't think Gresham had any matches that anyone will remember, even though I think he did good. Ishimori had a great match versus Shingo, but a lot of his other matches... they kind of slacked on. So actually, I thought the blocks overall were a lot more even because you had guys like Narita, Rocky step up in B block, and the A block didn't quite perform as well. And Shingo had 3 great matches, and a lot of the other ones didn't, you know, weren't as mind-blowing as you might think, in my opinion. So I kind of agree with Jamesy, but I kind of don't. Because I thought those 3 matches were all phenomenal versus Lee and Ishimori and Sho. So it's hard to say Shingo or Ospreay or Rocky, the best of the tournament. It's hard to argue with the guy who has the 3 best matches, but I think Ospreay was more consistent, and a lot of people in B block actually had their best match against him. Even Bushi had a good match, and Dookie.
Exactly. As I said, in my mind, there is no question that Will Ospreay is the MVP of this tournament. And if you consider his performances from earlier this year, He had these weird months where he didn't win a lot, but still, from his performance, just judging from his performances, he has been one of the best wrestler of the year.
I think he definitely had a chip on his shoulder for this this tournament because a lot of the booking behind him, and I just don't really know what to make of him long term. I'm not as confident.
Here we are again.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I'm really not as confident that...
I'm not as confident anymore myself, because it's we've talked about it twice now, and it's still...
Yeah. It's like Hiromu and the juniors all over again. Pretty much, like, you know, the longer it goes along, the more your confidence wanes, I feel like. But they could have something with him. I'm not discounting that at all. The year before, yeah, he had some really good matches, you know, early on, for sure. Best of the year, it's hard to say. I might have to get back to you on that one. But this tournament, he's definitely been a top performer, I would say. I like the Cobb match, too, now that I think about it. Archer was a good match.
Mm-hmm.
Did he face Okada? I think he did. It wasn't as good as Ishii and Okada. I remember.
Well,
that.
Yeah.
That wasn't that good. Ospreay and Okada wasn't a great match, in my opinion. Ibushi, I didn't love that, to be honest with you, but probably one of the better matches on the show.
Did he face Okada? Wait a sec. Actually, Okada... No, he did not. He did last year. This year was... He did. I was thinking about the anniversary.
That.
He faced Jay White at the anniversary show, and that was a very good match too. He faced Okada in the New Japan Cup,
and that wasn't a great match either. And Okada just had a great match versus Ishii afterwards. I'm kind of talking myself out of buying that.
there's no way in the end.
It's not no way. It's just.
Did you see the A-Kid match from White Wolf?
Oh yeah, that was a great match.
Yeah,
like that's outside of New Japan though. Like,
yeah, but I was just saying overall.
Oh, wrestler of the year? No. Like I said, there are others that I think would be him. So, somebody like Kento, I think it has to be up there.
Those two are close.
Kai, Kevin Ari, CML. Like, no. I'm saying Kento's match versus Kai.
Oh. Okay.
Listen, Kai's Dragon Gate tag team kind of run. I'm a fan, but let's not go crazy. No, listen, even I'm not going that wild on the board. But now, Cavernario and CMLL is somebody that I think is a great...
I can see that.
So there are a few guys up there, but Ospreay, you can make the case for him, especially in this tournament. I think this tournament has really been the shining jewel of his year, and I like that A-Kid match a lot as well. And he had some good stuff. Cobb and Ibushi were both good matches as well, in my opinion. So he's up there, but we've still got a long way to go the rest of the year and all that. So you know, you never can tell.
Maybe there's G1 left for him.
Yeah. If he has G1, I feel like every episode it always comes back down to I'll say there's some bad booking or something, and you'll be like, oh, G1's coming up. It'll be okay.
He can have my thing. Come on, let me have my thing.
The G1 is important. Yeah. Like, it really is. I just, you know, you never know with these sorts of things. But overall, the tournament's been pretty good, I would say. I'm not trying to bury it, but I just think I had too high expectations for A-Block, but B-Block actually went above them a little bit, so it wasn't all bad.
Yeah. Alrighty. Hope we shed a good light on the tournament for you if you haven't caught up on all the shows. Just pick the matches that we highlighted here. That will be a pretty good digest of the tournament for you. We'll see when we will be back. Possibly after Dominion, we'll see. But I think we should talk about some other wrestling in the New Japan for a change too, Dylan. I know that you did on our Patreon.
Yeah, that's right. I had a Spot Lariat. I had three different companies that I covered for that. It was like a little pad between an hour and a half show. I had Noah. I previewed the Junior Tag League, which just started a couple days ago, and talked about their match, the show, the Tag League final that did so good at Corcoran Hall. So I talked about Noah in general a little bit, talked about Kaito Kiyomiya, very underrated champion, in my opinion. I talked about DDT. They had their King of DDT tournament. Did you watch any of that?
I watched the entire tournament.
Yeah.
I liked the final, but I didn't...
Final?
It's the King of DDT, the tournament, the final.
Yeah, I'm saying the final was good.
Yeah, the final was good, but it's nothing that blew me away, to be honest.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. I think Takeshita actually had like all the best matches. I knew pretty much.
Did you see the Osaka show that DDT did last weekend? That was a pretty fun show.
Oh, yeah, that's
like
cool.
With Harp, Magnitude Kishiwada was on there, Billy Ken Kid, Kikutaro, all the Osaka guys.
Oh, yeah, all the Osaka guys. I loved it on there. And I also talked about the All Japan show. So do you have any thoughts on that one? We kind of missed it.
The Ishikawa show.
Yeah.
Other than that, I hate that Atsushi Aoki beat Koji Iwamoto again. It was a pretty good match.
I think I gave that a fart sound effect on the show.
Yeah, but obviously, like Kento and Ishikawa, they did what they always do in their matches.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm at this point that I really don't. How am I saying this? It's not like Kento. We've been talking about comfort zones a lot on this show. Kento didn't go out of his comfort zone for this match, and neither did Ishikawa. Well, he did in some ways, where he was brawling outside the ring and did this double stomp from the rafters and from the bleachers.
Sting Miyahara.
No, Sting Ishikawa.
Oh, yeah, Sting Ishikawa. That's right, I called that attention to that. But all that didn't even matter by the end. Kento just did the same crap.
Yeah, he's not out of his comfort zone. He just did his stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And the Fire Thunder driver on the apron, no sells it, like, mm-hmm. pretty much, like, right off. You know, I like that match. It was good in some ways, but Kento, to me, is the greatest enigma of wrestling. You know, he has more great matches for somebody that I just think does so much wrong in all of his matches. I come away feeling like that, but still, it was a good match. I actually like the All Asia tag better on the show. That's I just totally spoiled the spot, Larry. But
it was a very good match.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed by that whole situation, pretty much. So, shout-outs to that. You should definitely check those things out. But I covered them all. We had all kinds of stuff on the show. We had a Double or Nothing review that we did together. You were on board for that.
Oh yeah.
I have to make an announcement, though, on the Patreon. Rest in peace to the weekly U.S. Adventures.
Oh.
Can't do it.
The grind. The grind, Dylan.
Yeah. Yeah. Those Ring of Honor shows, Raw, I couldn't do it anymore. So,
like that the Ring of Honor shows are on Fight. It's really easy to watch them.
That's true.
So it's easy television. It's nothing outstanding. It's easy television.
Yeah, I like that PJ Black Iceland match they had a few weeks ago.
I like the Bandido and Shane Taylor match they had.
That was a good match, too. Yeah, there was some good wrestling on there. It's just such a dry product when you watch it.
Yeah, as I said, it's just television. Like, it flows. It doesn't really have highs. It doesn't really have lows. It's just there.
Oh, it had a low when Bubba Ray beat down Tenille Dashwood.
Oh, yeah.
That was a low.
That was a low. That's true.
I have to rest in peace on the U.S. Adventures so weekly. But I will maybe do some pay-per-views or something.
Look, I've been checking out Uncharted Territory from Beyond Wrestling in recent days, and I'm really into it. I really like it.
Yeah, I know. I saw you tweeting about that. You're really into Beyond right now.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe we could do something with that.
That we'll surely do within the next 2 weeks will be the second season of A Week of Lariat with Shinya Hashimoto. I don't know if you've watched any of those matches yet, but it's something. Let me tell you.
I've been preparing myself for this because of the matches you chose. I want to reiterate that you chose all these matches, not me.
I've watched four of them right now.
Okay, so I'm gonna watch all of them. We're gonna see how this goes. I'm not gonna spoil anything for that. You got to tune into the show to hear my thoughts on the matches. But I would really, recommend checking that out because a lot of people really liked it to listen to it. I got a message from somebody today that just signed up, and he was telling me, he was like, "Man, what's this Week of Lariat stuff all about?" And I told him, I was like, "This is what it's about." And he said, "Whoa, that's cool. I'm gonna sign up." That's cool. If you're on the fence, DM me, and I will convince you to sign up, if anything, on there. I did a very funny show. Tirecast W is now a thing on the Patreon
finally.
As well.
Like, finally. You were planning this for 2 years or so.
The master plan comes together with Tirecast W. I had my little sister on to review the show, of all people. That comes on there. The most nervous co-host that there's ever been, perhaps, going on. But basically, I'll shoot on her for a second because I know she won't listen to this. On the show, there was a part where I kind of made fun of her at the start, more or less. I called her a hermit because she never gets outside, and she got really mad and was like, you better delete that. She was like, you got to delete that. Stop right away. She was very upset about it. So I apologized to Cheyenne for that. But it actually, as the show went along, it actually got better. And I think the next couple of episodes, because she just messaged me the other day, and she was like, she was asking me about the show. So if you do listen to that, if you do listen to TigerCast W, first of all, the first episode is very entertaining as a wrestling fan, for just of how over the top it is. But let me know what you thought of that so I can tell her something. Also, a lot of people are very surprised at how Southern she sounds, too, because nobody could tell I'm from Tennessee on this show. But her, WH was DMing me. He said, you don't sound country at all, but your sister, very country. So that's what you have to look forward to. But we did all kinds of stuff. We had a Rage in the Cage earlier this month. We got to do another one of those. Soon, because I need to get five.
Oh yeah, we need to do another Rage in the Cage. That was very fun, definitely.
Yeah, very fun show. Senshu Shokai on Stardom.
Look like, as I said from the beginning, I can't be on all those shows, and we're looking to do some of those shows together. It was a very busy time in my life right now, and for my real job.
Yeah,
I try to keep up with everything going on, and there will be more stuff with me on that Patreon very soon.
Yeah, I was really happy we did all that we did pretty much on there. So the Senshu Shokai was really good on the Stardom, if you want to learn about Joshi wrestling. I have the third episode of Pure Heart, Pure Lariat. That'll be on the Patreon for a few more days before we put it out in public. And you get early access to all my Joshi panderings and things like that. So a lot of stuff going on the Patreon. It's really worth checking out, I would say.
Yeah, that's a good word to end the show today. So I want to thank you all for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.